period of the 3 weeks, it's especially indicated to pay a little more attention to some of the topics that govern interactions between man and man. Ben Adam Al-Khavero, we're told that it was sinas chinam, that it was baseless hatred that led to the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, the Khorban that we're still in the midst of now. So it's especially appropriate that during this period of time, when we mourn the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and when we hope to effect a change in the situation, to pay especially close attention to this aspect of our lives. And the topic we chose to start off with tonight, the two-part series, tonight and next week, so tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about Lashon Hara, which is also a interpersonal Avera that has a special relevance to the Beit HaMikdash destruction. Because we know Chazal connect Tisha B'Av historically to way before the actual destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but they connect it to the Chet HaMeraglim. That the Meraglim who committed the sin of Dibos HaAretz, of speaking negatively about the land of Israel, and they were crying and they were kvetching and they were complaining. So the Gemara says that Kadosh Baruch Hu said to them, you're kvetching, you're crying without real justification. You're crying a bechiya shel chinam, a worthless and unjustified cry. So in retribution, you're going to get a bechiya l'doros. God says, I'm going to set a bechiya l'doros, a crying for many generations that will come out of their worthless crying, their unjustified crying. So the destruction of Beis HaMikdash traces itself all the way back to the Chet HaMeraglim, all the way back to this initial Avera of Dibas HaAretz, of speaking bad about the land of Israel. And that Avera itself, Chazal, link thematically to Lashon Hara. It's linked to the Avera of Miriam, which the Torah told us about right before. That's what Rashi quotes from Chazal in the beginning of Parshas Shlach. Chazal asked the question about the juxtaposition of the Parshias, why the two topics are put next to each other. As mentioned, this is not the usual Shlach placement issue of Ketzer Meraglim Lufnei Hachala, but the other question of why the Meraglim after Miriam, that the Parshas Baloscha ends with Miriam, and Parshas Shlach begins with the Meraglim, and Chazal asks, what exactly is the message here? What's the Torah trying to tell us when it puts the Aver of Miriam before the story of the Meraglim? And Chazal explained the connection is that, look at the Meraglim. The Meraglim, they should have learned the lesson. They should have seen what happened to Miriam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, and she was punished with Saras, with however you want to translate the affliction of Saras, sometimes inaccurately translated as leprosy, whatever you want to call it. So she was punished for speaking Lashon Hara. And right away, already by Mincha that afternoon, you're reading about the Meraglim. The Meraglim, they saw what happened. They should have learned the lesson. And this Chazal is a little bit hard to understand, because it's not really such an obvious point. The implication is almost kind of a Kal V'Chomer type of learning, that look at Miriam, she got in trouble for speaking Lashon Hara. The Meraglim, they certainly shouldn't have done what they did. Sounds a little bit like a Kal V'Chomer type of point, and it's not really such an obvious point. Because one could easily have made the case that it doesn't go that way. That Miriam spoke about a human being. Miriam spoke about a person who has feelings, who could get hurt. And the Meraglim spoke about the land. And the land, as holy as it is, doesn't have feelings. Doesn't have an emotional impact. So it's really not such an obvious point. And if logic doesn't do it, the Gemara itself says that. The Gemara in the middle of Maseches Erechin, where the Talmud treats sugyas of Lashon Hara, the Gemara there says that that is indeed the case. That you know that Lashon Hara is really bad. How do you know that speaking about people is really bad? Because look at the Meraglim. The Meraglim spoke bad about Eitzim V'Avonim, about inanimate objects, and they got in trouble. So certainly to speak bad about a person is worse. So that's the way we would have thought. We would have thought that Lashon Hara is worse than speaking bad about people. So this comment of Chazal, that the Meraglim could have learned from Miriam, is not necessarily the most obvious way of looking at it. And that's something we have to try to figure out. It's a thought to keep in mind. We'll come back to that. What exactly are Chazal getting at when they tell us that the Meraglim should have learned from Miriam? So now let's take a little detour, and let's look a little bit from a more of a halachic point of view at the Avera of Lashon Hara in general. The Rambam has a surprising statement in Hilchos Deis, the laws of Deis, where he talks about Lashon Hara. So the Rambam is telling us that there are different types of Lashon Hara. What you might call a first degree Lashon Hara, and then there's a second degree Lashon Hara. We call it Avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara means the dust of Lashon Hara. It's also prohibited. It's also prohibited min HaTorah. But it's a kind of an indirect type. It's more of a second degree. So if I say straight out something bad about somebody, so that's first degree Lashon Hara. Say whatever, Joe's a jerk, that's straight out Lashon Hara. But let's say, the Rambam says, let's say I don't do it straight out like that. Let's say I do it in a more roundabout way. I pretend like I'm a nice guy. I say something that sounds innocent, but I really know that if people hear it, they're going to think something bad. So I'm clever. I have a way of speaking Lashon Hara and looking innocent at the same time. So I'm going to say something that's going to be just as damaging, just as hurtful, but on the surface it sounds innocent. So the Rambam says, that is called Avak Lashon Hara. That's second degree Lashon Hara. And some contemporary Svarim ask, that's surprising. Because if you were to ask me, as far as personal qualities are concerned, I would have said that that's worse. At least the person who says something direct is being honest. In both these cases, they're just as hurtful. The negative intent and negative effect is still there. The only difference is the second guy is sneaky about it. Svamish Makareyu Baseser is coming up from behind and hitting a guy in the back. So that's better? It's a little bit less? It's a second degree? If you do it in a sneaky way, that's less offensive? So how exactly do we understand what it is the Rambam's getting at? So some Achronim want to suggest that the point the Rambam is addressing is that perhaps there is a theory that some have suggested that the Rambam's position is that the Torah doesn't address personality traits directly. The Torah is certainly interested in influencing personality traits. The Torah definitely wants to create a certain type of personality, certain interested in influencing midos. But at the same time, the Torah can't address that directly. The Torah addresses behavior. So therefore, Lashon Hara can't be defined by how sneaky it is, can't be defined by how sleazy an approach it is, has to have a direct formulation. So therefore, in order to be first degree Lashon Hara, you have to have an objectively negative statement. And therefore, for the Ramban, who would define the Torah's perspective that way in general, that the Torah doesn't directly address qualities, rather addresses actions to affect qualities, so therefore the Torah would say that to say something that is objectively damaging, that is first degree pristine Lashon Hara. And something else which doesn't have that same objective quality to it, even though it's sleazier, even though it's more underhanded, even though it's more reprehensible in a sense, still as far as the strict Torah definition is concerned, that's second degree. That's already a level removed. While, alternatively, there are other Rishonim who may feel differently. And time doesn't permit to go into all the proofs of where these positions express themselves, but such position has been attributed to, for example, Rabbeinu Yonah, the author of Shari Tshuva, that perhaps it's not true. Maybe the Torah does directly address personality traits. Maybe the Torah does say, don't be a balgaiva, don't be haughty. And perhaps, even in the case of Lashon Hara also, the Torah can address a quality. And maybe when the Torah says, Lo Selech Rachel, don't run around being a talebearer, the Torah is saying, don't be a gossip. Don't indulge in this quality of gossiping. This personality trait, you like talking about people, you like always hearing what the latest dirt is, so that trait in itself, the Torah is telling you, that's negative, don't indulge this trait. So, to sum up, to begin a little bit of a halachic analysis of the topic, one could take perhaps two approaches. On the one hand, you could take a Maimonidean approach, maybe a Rambam type of approach, that the direct formulation of Lashon Hara is a damaging statement, or a potentially damaging statement. That's really what we're focused on. The prohibition of Lashon Hara is to say something that is either damaging or potentially damaging. And that's really what the prohibition is. And everything else comes along with that. While perhaps Rabbeinu Yonah's formulation is that the prohibition is to be a gossip, to indulge this negative quality of talking about people, of talking about the negative things about people, that in itself is what the Torah prohibits. So what I'd like to do over the next few minutes is look at a couple of different cases where the perspective may make a difference. Look at a couple of different examples where how it plays out may be affected by this question. Are we focused on avoiding damaging speech, or are we focused on avoiding the quality of gossip? To begin with, there is an exemption the Talmud talks about. Sounds like a very exciting exemption, those who are looking for Lashon Hara, but before we start, we should mention it's much more limited than it sounds. The post can quickly limit its scope, but on the surface, it sounds like a very broad exemption. The Talmud, in the middle of Maseches Erechin, talks about an exemption called Apei Tlasov. Apei Tlasov literally means in front of three, and the basic principle is that we're talking about something that is public knowledge. The Talmud says anything that is public knowledge, in front of three people, it's already known. So Lashon Hara doesn't attach. Because three, apparently, that's the definition of public. Right? Because we know, chavra chavra islay, v'chavra d'chavra chavra islay, your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a hairdresser, who has a cousin, who has an uncle, who has a neighbor, who has a dog walker, who's going to know. So two people know, the whole world. Three people know, the whole world knows. So something that's already known to three people, so that's already called public knowledge. And the Gemara says, it sounds like on the surface at least, that to discuss that is not prohibited as far as Lashon Hara is concerned. Now again, this is much more limited than it sounds. The poskim are quick to point out that still you can't have any negative intent in discussing it, and you can't have any intent to increase the circle of people who know about it. You have to only be working within the circle of people who already know. It's really much more limited than it sounds. But within whatever narrow limitations, it sounds like from the Gemara that if something is already known to whoever it is you're talking to, it's permissible to repeat it. And that Lashon Hara doesn't attach. However, Tosfos, on the side of the page, Tosfos takes a position which drastically limits this even further. Tosfos really slices it down to size. Because Tosfos explains that when the Talmud says you're allowed to talk about things that are already known, the Talmud was not talking about negative things. Well, what's left? Aren't we talking about Lashon Hara? So Tosfos says that no, you should know that Lashon Hara isn't only negative. You can also have what you might call a white Lashon Hara, a positive Lashon Hara. Something you could say positive, which could still have a negative effect. For example, the example Tosfos is talking about, one of the most positive things you can ever say about anybody is, I had a great steak at his house last night. But, nonetheless, that could still be Lashon Hara. That could still be damaging, because he may not want that to be known. Because the next night, he's going to sit down to dinner, and 5 minutes in, he's going to get a ring at the doorbell, and it's going to be his next door neighbor walking past, just saying hello, that's steak, tuck him in, and 5 minutes later, the next guy, 5 minutes later, the next guy, pretty soon he doesn't have any dinner left. So even though what you're saying is on the surface completely positive, and you mean it positively, nonetheless, it could still be damaging, and that also could be considered to be Lashon Hara. So Tosfos says, when the Talmud says it's permissible to talk about things that are well known, that are public knowledge, we're not talking about negative things. We're not talking about the dirt. We're talking about the positive Lashon Hara. Something like he makes a great steak, which is a positive sentence which could get him in trouble. If everyone knows already anyway, there's no harm in talking about it more. So it seems that there's a very big difference between the way the Talmud presents, without Tosfos, the impression you get from the Talmud about what the exemption of Apei Tlasov is, and the way you get the impression from reading Tosfos. That from the Talmud it seems that as long as it's public knowledge, you're allowed to talk about it. Again, assuming you're not increasing the circle. So apparently one could suggest that the interpretation is consistent with the Talmud's reading by itself, is that the problem of Lashon Hara is saying damaging things. That if you're going to say something that could put somebody at risk of getting hurt, that's what Lashon Hara is. And therefore, if you're not telling anybody new, if everybody you're going to talk to has heard it already, so then you're not really hurting the person at all. You're not putting them at any further risk because everything you're going to say is already known. So if that's really our focus, so then perhaps we can understand the way it sounds like from the Gemara, that as long as they're not increasing the circle, as long as they're not telling anybody new, so if the problem of Lashon Hara is you're going to hurt somebody with speech, so then you can make a case that in this circumstance you're not hurting anybody because everyone already knows. However, if that's the case, so why would Tosfos say that something that's negative you can't say even if it's public knowledge? So perhaps Tosfos is of the opinion that the focus is not only hurting someone through speech, but the focus is really indulging in this negative trait. The negativity of talking about people, that's what it is that the Torah is prohibiting. And therefore, even if people know already, that doesn't minimize the fact that you're indulging in gossip, that you're indulging in talking about people's negativities. And the only time it's going to be permitted is if you have both things in play. One, it's not negative, it's positive. And it's not going to cause them any problems because the people you're talking to already know. So perhaps in this difference between the way the Gemara sounds on its surface and Tosfos, this difference shows us a little bit what we're talking about, that the Gemara, without Tosfos' limitation, seems to give us the impression that the focus is hurting someone with speech. So as long as you're not going to hurt someone because it's already public knowledge, you're not causing any increase in the problem. While Tosfos is perhaps telling us that the real focus of the prohibition is indulging in this quality, being a gossip, talking about people negatively, and even if people know, that's not at all mitigated. And it's only permissible when it's both positive and well-known. So that's one example. Let's talk about another example. We know that there is a correlate, there is a parallel prohibition to Lashon Hara. So you say it takes two to tango. So there's another prohibition. It's not only prohibited to speak Lashon Hara, it's also prohibited to receive Lashon Hara. That just as it's not appropriate to say it, so you're not allowed to accept it either. Now that's a little bit easier said than done, so to speak, because it's hard to define what that means. It's one thing to tell someone not to speak Lashon Hara. To tell someone not to accept Lashon Hara is a little more difficult. How exactly do you define that? Now, if everything was all cut and dried, if we're only talking about circumstances where somebody comes up to you and says, "Hello, I'm interested right now in telling you something highly negative about my friend Reuven. Would you like to receive?" So then you could say, "No, I'm prohibited from doing that. I'm not allowed to accept Lashon Hara." But normally it doesn't happen that way, right? Very often it could happen that somebody will say something and it's too late. You've heard it already. So what exactly do we mean when we say there's a prohibition to receive Lashon Hara? So what exactly does that mean? How do you define this prohibition? So on this topic, it seems that there is a dispute among later authorities. The most famous authority, most famous sefer on the laws of Lashon Hara that we've all heard of, is of course the sefer Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan passed away in 1933, wrote the classic work on the laws of Lashon Hara. And in this sefer, so the Chafetz Chaim defines the prohibition of Kabbalah Lashon Hara. Says, what does it mean not to receive Lashon Hara? Says it means as follows, that if somebody tells you something negative about somebody, so yes, it's true that you'll have to protect yourself if it's something that could be damaging, could be dangerous, so you have to protect yourself. If somebody tells you this guy's a car thief, so you're not going to hire him to be your valet parker, you're going to protect yourself just because it might be true. You're not sure, so you'll take a measure to protect yourself. So we call lemeichush meboy, that we allow you to be choshesh, we allow you to take it into consideration that it might be true. But in your heart of hearts, you're not allowed to believe it. You have to tell yourself you don't believe it's true. You're not allowed, that's what it means not to accept it, you're not allowed to believe it's true. That's the way the Chafetz Chaim seems to rule. And a few generations later, in our own time, a contemporary author, Rav Moshe Sternbach, author of the Moed and Muzman, perhaps the most famous sefer, so in his Tshuvas, titled Tshuvas for Hanhagas, So Rav Moshe Sternbach took issue with this ruling. Moshe Sternbach writes that, let's face it, Chafetz Chaim was a very religious man. Chafetz Chaim was a tzaddik. But we're not all on that same level. We don't all have that kind of control. If somebody who you've known for 20 years has always told you the truth every time, tells you something, it's not so easy for you to just turn it off and turn it on. It's not so easy for you to just say, I'm not going to believe it. If you know he's never lied to you before, everything he's told you over the past 20 years is true, so you're going to believe this also. So the Torah lo nitna l'malchei hasharis, human beings aren't angels, they can't just turn that off. So it must be that that's not what we mean when we say you're not allowed to accept Lashon Hara. So what do we mean then? How exactly do we define it? So Rav Sternbach suggests a different interpretation. It means, again, you accept what you need to in order to protect yourself. But beyond that, even if you do believe it in your heart of hearts, you have to make sure not to let the subject of the Lashon Hara get hurt. So if somebody tells you this guy's a car thief, so again, you'll make sure not to make him the valet parking guy. But other than that, you're not going to snub him in the cafeteria, you're not going to treat him any differently otherwise, you're not going to make him suffer because of this information being transmitted, you're going to make sure that the way you treat him is not going to be impacted. So basically the difference is, Rav Sternbach says, we can't really regulate what you're going to believe, but we can ask that you will make sure that hearing this information doesn't impact on your behavior. So that's the key difference here, that the Chafetz Chaim is saying that accepting Lashon Hara means you're not even allowed to believe it internally, you're not even allowed to believe it in your heart of hearts. And Rav Sternbach is saying we can't really regulate that, but we can tell you not to allow your behavior to treat this person any differently. And one could suggest that this is the same dispute. That perhaps the Chafetz Chaim is, like Rabbeinu Yonah, taking the position that the real focus is the mida, is the quality, and therefore, how is the quality expressed? The quality is expressed both in speaking Lashon Hara and also in listening, just hearing it, thinking about it, is also indulging in this quality. So therefore, the Chafetz Chaim, on guard for this, is saying, don't even in your heart of hearts enjoy it, so to speak. Don't even allow yourself to believe it. And Rav Sternbach is saying the real focus of the prohibition is not hurting someone through speech, and therefore your responsibility as the listener is to not let the person get hurt because of your having heard it. One could, by the way, take this to another level, the same question, which could go to a different level. There's a very interesting hypothetical that's suggested by the Shilas and Shuvas Tirosh V'Yitzer. A few generations ago, the Shuvas Tirosh V'Yitzer has the following hypothetical. Let's say somebody were to walk into this room right now. He's going to come into the room right now. He's going to sit down over here. And he's going to be bored. So he's going to want to start to talk to the guy next to him. So he's going to go over to this guy right over here in the second row. And he's going to say, listen, I'm not interested in listening to this lecture, but I want to schmooze with you. And I heard the juiciest piece of gossip about some guy, Wroblowski. And I would really love to tell you. So Mr. Wroblowski over here has a choice. He has two possible avenues. Now, first of all, you should know he's a tzaddik. So he's not going to say, hello, I'm Wroblowski. He's not going to want to embarrass the guy. So that's not one of his choices. So he has two other choices. What are his choices? On the one hand, he could say, thank you very much for the kind offer. I'm also looking for a distraction. But I can't take Lashon Hara, so I don't want you to talk about it. You have to find something more neutral. I don't want to hear Lashon Hara. That's one possible option. Or, option two is a little more interesting. The Tirosh V'Yitzer suggests, then maybe in this case, maybe he shouldn't object. Why not? Because since it's about him anyway, so let's assume he's not really going to find out anything new. And he has an advantage now. If he listens, the Gemara says that one of the greatest brachos is given to a certain type of personality. Chazal tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu loves very much a certain type of personality. What type of personality is that? Hanel lovim v'einam ovim. Shomim cherpasam, the einam yeshivim. Those who are able to listen to their own disgrace and not respond, hear themselves get insulted and not insult back, that's a tremendous thing, and that's a tremendous character trait. So Mr. Wroblowski could decide that that could be a good thing I could do now. I could listen to what this guy has to say, and I won't respond, I won't argue, and I'll get a tremendous profit. So this is a hypothetical that was suggested by the Shuvas Tiros V'Yitzer, and that could flow out of the same discussion, that if you believe the problem with Lashon Hara is the negative quality of gossiping, and receiving Lashon Hara means allowing gossip to take place, so even in this instance, Chaim would have to say, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to allow your Lashon Hara to continue. But if the whole idea is hurting someone through speech or letting someone get hurt through speech, so maybe in this unique case, he could suggest that maybe he'll listen, and since nobody extra is going to get hurt, maybe it's a good opportunity to get a bracha. Somebody once pointed out, this is good if you have a secret identity. This comes up very often. People are often criticizing your secret identity in front of you, and you have this option, again, of either objecting or accepting it and saying, I'll get the bracha. That's a discussion. I should mention another quick idea, by the way. The Rama and others write that the problem of Lashon Hara is exacerbated very much, is much worse when it's in print or when it's in writing. Writing is worse than speaking. And that idea, by the way, seems to address the component that's more result-focused. It's more about the damage. Because as far as the quality is concerned, I'm not sure if there's a discernible difference. But as far as the damage is concerned, the damage seems to be much greater, both because it continues as long as it's lying around, and the amount of people who could see it grows. So maybe if one is focused on the damage, it's easier to understand how that idea could emerge, that Lashon Hara in writing is worse than Lashon Hara that's spoken. It's parenthetically mentioned, by the way, when we talk about the type of damage that could take place. So there's an interesting suggestion in the Tshuvas of the Kajig Lava Rav, called Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi. It's written by Tzvi Hirsch Frimmer, who was the Kajig Lava Rav, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin around the time of the Holocaust. He was killed in the Holocaust. If you want to see what he looks like, if anybody ever visits Yeshiva University, so on the fifth floor of the library, if you go up to 5A, so 5A was named after him. The Kajig Lava's brother, his name was Mr. Leon Frimmer, came to YU and donated 5A in his memory. So there's a big picture of him by the elevator. So the Kajig, if you make a right by the elevator, you see a big picture of the Kajig Lava Rav. So the Kajig Lava Rav suggested that Lashon Hara is really a protective measure. Now we know the Torah prohibits hatred. Lo sisnas achicha b'lvavecha. So therefore, we're afraid that if we let you talk about people, you'll come to hate them. And therefore, it's really kind of a siyag, it's really kind of a protective measure. You know, the Achronim have suggested that such a thing exists, that even though we normally associate that with rabbinical innovations, that the rabbis made new laws to protect Torah laws, there is a possibility that sometimes you have biblical laws, which are also there to protect other Torah laws. This is most prominently advanced by Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel was a very prominent Talmudist 100 years ago, and he wrote a sefer in which he asked an open question, are there any prohibitions in the Torah which are really there to protect other prohibitions? Even though we normally associate that with rabbinical prohibitions, is it ever the case that the Torah makes a halacha that's really there to protect another din in the Torah? And he says, well, let me think about it for a minute. He says, yeah, you can think of like 17, 18 examples. And then other contemporary sfarim added a few more. So if you put everybody's list together, you have 30, 40 examples of mitzvahs in the Torah, which are there, at least according to one interpretation, each one is subject to discussion, but at least potentially may be there to protect other mitzvahs. So that's how the Kajig Lava Rav suggests that the prohibition of Lashon Hara is there to protect the prohibition of hatred, that since we don't want you to hate people, so therefore it's also advised you don't speak badly about them in order you don't come to hate them. There is a similar comment about a different prohibition. A few weeks ago we read Parashas Korach. In Parashas Korach, when the whole story ends, so the Torah tells us a prohibition not to be like Korach. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin understands that to mean that we shouldn't be disputatious. We shouldn't be machzik machlokis. That anyone who perpetuates a dispute, anyone who fuels a fire of a fight, violates the prohibition of being like Korach. So the She'il sister of Achaigon, written in that immediate post-Gaonic period. So the Shultas Rav Achaigon suggests that this prohibition is also protective of the prohibition against hatred. That we're afraid that if people fight too much, if people are too disputatious, they're going to come to hate each other, and we know the Torah doesn't want that, so therefore the Torah says, don't fight, don't speak Lashon Hara, that there are various concepts that are all there to protect this hatred. And again, this time of the 3 weeks, that's a very big focus, because the Talmud tells us that it is this hatred that led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. In any case, so what other possible ramifications might there be of this possible distinction, of this focus on either damaging speech or on the quality itself? So there are a couple of other theoretical points. On the one hand, we do know that there is a major exception to the laws of Lashon Hara that's called toelos. That if you're going to say something that's going to help someone else, if somebody is in any kind of danger because of somebody else, so then it's not only permitted, but it's required that you reveal that information. So if somebody is going to do business, if somebody's going to get married, if somebody's whatever it's going to be, somebody's going to get involved with somebody, and that person poses a threat to them, so then it's not only permitted to tell that person, but you're obligated to tell that person. But on a theoretical basis, one could question, what are the mechanics exactly of that din? How exactly does that work? Is it that this is not Lashon Hara at all? That the prohibition of Lashon Hara is really the quality of being a gossip? And here you're not doing it for gossipy reasons. You're doing it for positive reasons. You're doing it to protect someone else. So maybe one could make the case that the reason this is permitted and required is because it's not called Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is gossiping. And here you're acting in service of a real goal, and you're acting to help someone, so that's not at all what the Torah describes when it prohibited Lashon Hara. That's one possible way of viewing it. On the other hand, we could view it differently. And we could say the Lashon Hara is not fueled by the quality, it's fueled by the result. In which case, it seems that this is Lashon Hara, because maybe it will hurt somebody, he's going to lose out on a shidduch, lose out on a business partner. But nonetheless, it's outweighed by the other mitzvah of Lo Samad al Dam Re'acha. The Torah tells us we're not allowed to stand by when someone else is at risk. You're required to step in when somebody else could get hurt. So maybe we have a clash between Lashon Hara and Lo Samad al Dam Re'acha, and Lo Samad wins. That really, it is Lashon Hara. But Lashon Hara was defeated in this case by the imperative of Lo Samad al Dam Re'acha. So this really seems to be a theoretical question. Doesn't seem to be so practical, but the theoretical approach may depend on how you understand the whole prohibition. Is Lashon Hara a Midah-oriented idea? In which case, maybe when it's for a purpose, it's just not Lashon Hara at all. That's why it's okay and necessary. Or maybe Lashon Hara is about hurting someone, in which case you, in theory, could have Lashon Hara, but it's permitted because it's outweighed by another imperative of Lo Samad al Dam Re'acha. Does it make a difference? It might make a difference. The Chafetz Chaim has a surprising psak. The Chafetz Chaim says that if, let's say you have two stores, and one store is charging a little bit more, but not in a crazy way, he's not gouging people, he just has a higher price. So the Chafetz Chaim, it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim, you're not allowed to tell somebody, don't go to that guy, he charges more. And there are those contemporary authors who have expressed shock at such a ruling. Why should that be prohibited? You're just trying to help the consumer. You're just trying to protect the consumer from having to pay more. So why is that at all Lashon Hara? So maybe the question is, how exactly does this toelos idea work? Is it that as long as you're trying to help someone else, Lashon Hara is not a concept at all? In which case, it's hard to understand why you shouldn't be able to tell somebody this fact. Or maybe the idea is that it's kind of a clash between helping the other person and avoiding Lashon Hara. And therefore, maybe we really only want to use toelos when it's a more serious risk. Where somebody's really going to get hurt, then we use the toelos thing. But if it's just, it's going to pay a few cents more. And again, the Chafetz Chaim specifies it's not a case where the guy's really going to get robbed. It's only that it's a little bit more expensive in this store than it is in that store, but it's still way within the norm. So maybe that's not enough. Maybe we need a more serious type of toelos in order to justify it, because at the end of the day, somebody does get hurt a little bit, so when we're weighing up the different hurts, we need something more substantial. Again, it's a little bit of a surprising psak, but maybe the analysis might be along these lines. What exactly is it that governs the toelos factor? Is it that if you're positively motivated, then the midah of Lashon Hara is not a problem at all? Or is it that the good that you're doing to help someone else outweighs Lashon Hara, in which case maybe we want the good to be a little bit more substantial? That's maybe something to talk about. You also find this discussion in the realm of chinuch as well, that sometimes somebody, theoretically speaking, strictly speaking, the Talmud tells us, and the halacha seems to say, that to say that somebody is a Baal Tshuva is Lashon Hara. Talmudically speaking, Baal Tshuva really means something differently than we use it nowadays. It could be a case, not necessarily where somebody didn't have a religious upbringing, but somebody just did an intentional aveira at one point and has now repented. So strictly speaking, to reveal this fact about someone, the halacha tells us, is Lashon Hara. Strictly speaking, to say that somebody did an aveira in his past and is repented, so that's not supposed to be public knowledge. So that is considered to be Lashon Hara. So let's say a teacher wants to do this for educational purposes. He wants to inspire his audiences by saying that, look, this guy was able to overcome his problems, you can too. So then, maybe there's room to say that if it's more of a midah-oriented idea, so maybe midos-wise, that's less problematic. If it's a hurting person idea, so then you still have to worry about that because you have to figure out how much this individual would want this fact to come to light. But that could also interact with a different question. The minhag Klal Yisrael seems to be to assume that Lashon Hara is permitted when we don't mention the name. If you want to say, I heard a crazy story about someone yesterday, and you don't say who you're talking about, so again, let's assume that we're not talking about a case where it's at all possible for the listener to figure out who you're talking about, because if they can figure it out in any way, then it's just as bad as actually saying the name. But let's say the person really is protected completely. Let's say the anonymity is totally there. So the minhag seems to be, we normally assume that there isn't anything wrong with repeating such stories. The truth is, this is something that Poskim did discuss a little bit. The Hisoyrus Tshuva is one authority who discusses this question, that is it permitted to say something that is negative if you conceal the identity of the subject? So it may be that this is also a factor of this question. That if you believe the problem is causing someone to be hurt through speech, so then maybe you can make the case that, well, if I'm really successful, and it's a big if, but assuming I'm really successful at concealing his identity, so then maybe I can make a case that I'm not putting him at any risk. But if the idea is that you're supposed to avoid gossip, so then perhaps even when you're not mentioning the name, so I think this is a minhag in gossip columns also to have an occasional item without a name, and that still has a certain salacious quality to it. People still like repeating the dirt without the name. So if the idea is to extinguish this quality, so then maybe one could make the case that this should be discouraged as well, because it still indulges this trait of gossiping. But to put the last two questions together, so if somebody wants to inspire a classroom or something like that with a story about somebody who did something wrong and repented, and especially if they're not mentioning the name, so one could suggest that that has two things in its favor, because the intent is positive, the intent is not gossipy, and the subject is protected because they don't know who you're talking about. So those two elements together, to combine these last two issues, may be a situation in which you're totally covered. In any case, this whole discussion about whether we're focused on the damage or we're focused on the midah may underlie a major historical dispute. As we discussed, the most well-known classic work on the laws of Lashon Hara was the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan's work on Lashon Hara, Chafetz Chaim. Now, there was a very famous contemporary, a slightly older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim, who was named Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a Gadol Hador at the time, and was also well known for having really started what we call the Mussar movement, really directed the focus of working on your personality traits, working on your character traits, and putting serious attention on developing personal attributes. So one would have thought that the book Chafetz Chaim would have been right up his alley. One would have thought that this would have been his favorite book. And the truth is, there are many indications that he was a tremendous fan. But nonetheless, the history books tell a story that he refused to give a haskam. We know the custom with Sfarim is you want to publicize your book, you want people to buy your sefer. So very often, author just starting out is not so well known. So he goes to more famous rabbanim of his time, has them read the sefer first, and then write a letter they print at the beginning saying, I know this guy, you know his father-in-law, whatever, I once walked through the path in the street, he seems like a nice guy, you could buy his book. So Rabbi Shaul Salanter, story has it, declined to write the Haskama for the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Why? Isn't it exactly the kind of book he would want to be out there? Seems to be right up his alley. So he said, yes, it is. It's a wonderful book. But there's one ruling in there I disagree with. There's one ruling I feel I cannot endorse, I can't put my name on. So his students asked him, so why don't you just write the Haskama? And write a little footnote at the bottom on page 342. It says such and such, and I think that's incorrect. So he responded, nobody reads Haskamas anyway. So they're just going to see my name at the top. They're going to think I agree with everything, and I'm afraid of that. This is one ruling I just can't endorse. So what's the ruling? What was this controversial ruling that caused this dispute that the Chafetz Chaim thought was the case, and Rabbi Shaul Salanter felt he cannot put his name on? So it seems like the Chafetz Chaim is saying the following. And he's based on Rabbeinu Yonah, based on Rishon. Let's talk about the case of Joe. Joe is a happy man, very happy man. Joe is sitting on his armchair in his den, watching TV. He has pretzels and a beer, a soda, whatever it is. Very happy man. All of a sudden, he gets a phone call. It's from Joe's best friend, Harvey. Harvey says, Joe, how you doing? Doing good. Great. Listen, Joe, I have to ask you a question. Yom Kippur is coming up. And I just learned in school that if I do something against someone else, if I do an Avera bin Odom L'Chavera, that Yom Kippur is only going to atone for me if I ask forgiveness, if I ask for Mechila for what I did. So if I punch someone in the nose, not enough to go to Shul and Yom Kippur and Davin and ask for forgiveness and to fast. I have to ask the guy who I punched to forgive me. So, that being the case, Joe, I need to ask you for forgiveness. And Joe's like, what do you mean? You never did anything to me. You never punched me in the nose. You never did anything wrong. Why should I have to forgive you? Harvey says, well, there's the thing. You see, you didn't know this, but every day for the past 3 or 4 months or so, I've been telling people that even though everyone thinks I'm your friend, I don't really like you, and I think you're obnoxious, and I think you're annoying, and you're just really not a great guy, and I really just hang around you because you buy me lunch. But I'm sorry about that. You shouldn't have done that, and I would like to apologize right now and ask you for forgiveness, because Yom Kippur's coming up. So, Joe's a nice guy. So it's very possible that Joe will forgive him. But, I promise you, when he hangs up the phone, he's a lot less happy than he was when he picked it up. So, that may be a somewhat extreme formulation, but it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim, I emphasize sounds like, we'll discuss in a minute, sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim, like that's what you have to do, as unpleasant and as odd as that sounds, you have to ask forgiveness if you do something wrong to someone, and that's what he's got to do. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, Chas v'shalom. How could it be? The Torah prohibits onas dvarim. The Torah prohibits hurting someone's feelings. So you have no right to hurt someone's feelings just because you want a clean conscience. You want to feel better. You want to feel like you got it off your chest. And you're going to make him miserable. You have no right to do that. You're not allowed to do that. That's onas dvarim. So Bishrael Salanta felt very strongly this is something that he can't endorse. And just fill in some of the details here, there were poskim who struggled with what it was the Chafetz Chaim sounded like he was saying. It really is hard to imagine that that's the best route. There are those who have suggested somewhat of a modified version that maybe he only meant the case where the guy was going to find out anyway, or he knew it was out there, he didn't know who it was. Some type of case not as blatant as the one we described. And besides that, poskim discuss if we're going to assume that the halacha is indeed like Rabbi Shaul Salanter, that one should not ask for mechila, so what do? So as you approach Yom Kippur and you want to try to repent for Lashon Hara, in theory, if anyone any of us ever violated this avera, I don't know, but in theory, if it ever should happen, so how do you repent if you can't ask for mechila? So there are some suggestions in poskim. Some suggest, for example, that normally, really ideally in Hilchas Mechila, when you punch a guy in the nose, so really what you're supposed to do is, not what we do nowadays, you're supposed to really specify. You're supposed to go up to him and say, listen, I punched you in the nose, that was a bad idea, I'm really sorry, I apologize, I hope you forgive me. And the custom that we have, we just kind of run around on autopilot on Erev Yom Kippur and say, are you mokel me, are you mokel me, are you mokel me, it's really not so ideal. Nonetheless, some poskim write, it could be that social development can help us, because now, since that's what people do, so at least you can take, if it's a case of Lashon Hara, if it's a case where you don't want to tell the guy what you did, so then maybe in this one case, you should take advantage of this route and just say the general, are you mokel me, before Yom Kippur, and rely on that. But you have to make sure to do it at the right time. If you call him up on Purim and say, listen, Joe, I'm just wondering, you forgive me for anything I may have done? So he's going to get a little suspicious, and that's going to be probably worse. So you have to make sure to do it at the right time, but assuming you take advantage of this time period and you wait till Erev Yom Kippur, whenever it's running around anyway, so even though for everything else that's far from ideal, some Sfarim suggest that for this situation, that might be the way to go. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron Levrach, and his Sefer on the Rambam, he discusses this whole story, tells you all the details if you want to look it up, and he suggests that Lashon Hara is just different than everything else, and that the best way to address it is to try to counteract its effects. That try to spread positive things, try to say nicer things, and hope that somehow you will outweigh and negate, to whatever extent possible, the effect of the negative things you said. Because the approach of Mechila, in this case, wouldn't be possible, as Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had objected. So you do have this dispute between the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and one could suggest that it's the same issue that's motivating the dispute. That perhaps Rabbi Yisrael Salanter understood that the key issue in Lashon Hara is hurting someone with speech. And therefore, he would say, what's the point in calling him up and hurting him again with speech? Talking to him and telling him something that's going to make him miserable is totally counterproductive in an attempt to fix Lashon Hara. It's just doing the same thing all over again. While perhaps the Chafetz Chaim, as difficult as it is to understand in a more blatant sense, is really coming at it more from a Midos point of view, and saying that the real issue is the gossipy aspect, and even though it's hard to understand how you get around to hurting his feelings, but since the focus is trying to repair the damage, at least it's a little bit easier to understand than it is if we focus on the damage component, whereas Rabbi Yisrael Salanter objects, it's very hard to understand how this is not very counterproductive. So maybe this dispute, again, kind of mirrors the same issue we've been talking about. Is the focus the damage that one causes through speech, or is it the quality of being a gossip? And that's what we've basically been highlighting the whole time. And the truth is, these two elements do kind of have a synergistic relationship. That the more you have this trait of being a gossip, the more you end up hurting people. And the more you hurt people, the more you strengthen the trait of being a gossip. And each one impacts on the other. And it's this relationship which perhaps is very much at the center of things. And it's interesting to note, when we talk about Miriam, so the Torah tells us the story about Miriam, and then later on, if you look in your article Sidurim after Shacharis, you'll see that there are six zechiros, that some people say, six commandments to remember. And one of them is, the Torah tells us to remember the incident of Miriam. And the Ramban lists this as one of the 613 mitzvot. The Rambam doesn't, and the Ramban says this is one that he forgot. He has a section, Mitzvahs to Rambam forgot. This is one of them. In his commentary to Chumash, he says the same thing. That there is an absolute mitzvah min ha-Torah to remember the incident of Miriam. Why is that so important? Why should there be a special mitzvah to remember this story specifically? The Meforshim explain, Poskim explain, it's to protect against Lashon Hara. Okay, but that doesn't really cover it, because there are a lot of prohibitions in the Torah. And it's not the case that every time there's a prohibition in the Torah tells us a special story, and then tells us another mitzvah to remember the story to avoid the averus. Not the case. So why is Lashon Hara special? Why is it that especially in the case of Lashon Hara we have a story and we have a mitzvah to remember the story, and it's different than all the other prohibitions in the Torah? So Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher, who was the Mashgiach in Slabodka, suggested that the key factor here may be the concept we mentioned earlier of Avak Lashon Hara, second degree Lashon Hara. Because it's one thing to say, if I say something bad about someone, that's a problem. But another example of second degree Lashon Hara would be if I say something positive with positive intent and it comes out negative. It comes out hurtful. So one could really object to this. What do you want from me? It's one thing if you're going to tell me not to say bad things, so I could be careful not to say bad things. But if you're going to tell me that I can't even say good things that come out bad, well, I don't know how they're going to come out. That's the whole point. I thought I was saying something good. So what can you require of me? What can you ask me to do if I thought I was saying something good? So how can you tell me that's a problem? I didn't know how it was going to come out. So Rav Sher suggested that the message of the Miriam story is to show us how dangerous a territory Lashon Hara is. That here you have Miriam, Tzadikah, one of our primary role models, and she certainly meant well. And even Miriam tripped over Lashon Hara. Even Miriam had a problem with Lashon Hara. So if it's so tricky, so what do we have to do? What's our responsibility? Our responsibility is to remember this in advance and know that it takes practice. You have to work on developing a sensitivity so you know how the things you say come out. It's not just that I'll say something and see what happens, float out a trial balloon, see what happens when I say something, because that's dangerous. Look what happened to Miriam. The Torah is telling us that in this specific Avera, it's too complicated for us to just say, I'll be careful when it comes up. But rather, I have to work on developing the sensitivity in advance, and I have to work on the interrelationship between the quality and the Avera, between the Midah and the damage, because they are so closely linked. I may not be able to control the damage if I don't control the quality. To give an example where we see this in our daily lives, rather I should say in our weekly lives, so Friday night we make Kiddush, and our custom is we cover the challahs. So why do you cover the challahs when you make Kiddush? So the Yerushalmi gives us three reasons. One reason that's a little bit hard to understand is we're afraid of embarrassing the challahs. We cover the challahs because we don't want to embarrass them. So why are we so afraid of that? I'll tell you a secret. The challahs will get over it. And what you do 5 minutes later is much, much worse. So why have a concern to protect the embarrassment of the challahs? And the principle seems to be that when you're dealing with people's emotions, when you're dealing with that very tricky neighborhood, that is human reaction. So it's not enough to say, I'll just live my life and hopefully everything will work out. Because if you haven't worked on developing that quality, it's not going to work out. You're not going to know how things are going to be taken. You're not going to know how things are going to develop. And people will get hurt. Therefore, the halacha tells us that if you have this quality, if you have this issue of sensitivity, you have to practice. You have to work on developing a sensitivity, even with the inanimate objects, even with the challahs. Work on seeing where are there situations where maybe somebody might take something in an offensive way, and work on getting rid of that quality so that when you actually deal with human beings, you are sensitive. So the message being that if you have this trait that will lead you in this way, or even if you don't, but certainly if you do, so there is a requirement to practice and to develop a sensitivity to make sure that people will not get hurt, even in the situation where that wasn't what you planned. And to take that perspective, we can then go back and look at the Rashi that we started with. So Rashi says, why does the Torah put the Meraglim right after Miriam? Because the Meraglim should have learned the lesson from Miriam. And we asked, well, what do you mean? Where's the Kal Vachomer? What they're doing wasn't worse than what Miriam was doing. Miriam was dealing with a human being and they were dealing with an inanimate land. So perhaps the pshat is that Rashi is not telling us the Kal Vachomer. Rashi is telling us that the Meraglim should have seen that look at what happened to Miriam. Here Miriam meant well. and was on such a high level with such tzedekes, and still Lashon Hara was a problem for her. What's the lesson? What's the muster that they should have taken? That if they have a tendency towards negativity, so they have to deal with that right away. They have to get rid of that. And they have to start practicing. And right away, what do they do right in the next Aliyah? They go say negative things about the land of Israel? It shows you they missed the whole point. It shows you they missed the whole lesson of Miriam. And perhaps that's the message that Rashi is trying to get to us. That not that there's a Kal V'Chomer, not that what they did was worse than what Miriam did, but that they missed the lesson of Miriam, which was that Lashon Hara poses such a complex challenge that if we have a trait of negativity, it's incumbent upon us to work to get rid of that trait, to work to develop a personality that is more sensitive, and to run right away and indulge this negativity, and to speak about the land of Israel in this way is completely to overlook the entire message of Miriam. And I'll just quickly add as we close up, and we'll just quickly go over what we said. So one could also suggest that the common link between what Miriam did and what the Meraglim did, the Aveira of Lashon Hara on the one hand and Dibas Haaretz on the other hand, speaking bad about Israel on the other hand, is that really one could ask the same type of question about both. So I have a prohibition to speak Lashon Hara, and I have a prohibition to speak bad about the land of Israel. But both prohibitions are a little bit hard to understand, because Lashon Hara, as we know, is by definition true. If I'm speaking Lashon Hara, I'm saying something that's true. So why can't I say something that's true? Why can't I, if I'm saying only facts, why can't I say? Why can't I say something that's not slanderous? And I could ask the same question about Dibas Haaretz. If I really have problems with the land of Israel, if I really have something that's bothering me, so why can't I say it? I'm not lying. Why can't I say it? And perhaps the key element of both is that both represent a lack of appreciation of what it is we're dealing with. Then we talk about Lashon Hara, that if we truly appreciated what our fellow Jew is and everything about that person, so even the true things that bother us wouldn't make our radar screen, wouldn't be worth talking about. And if we really were able to focus on all the tremendous good that was there, so it wouldn't be worth saying these things that bother us. And the fact that somebody is still able to say, this is what I think about this guy, all these negative things, that shows a fundamental lack of appreciation for what it is we're talking about. And Dibas Haaretz reflects the same quality, that if one can go to Eretz Yisrael, look at Eretz Yisrael, and come back and say, the foremost thing in my mind is you can't get good pretzels, so then I'm truly lacking in any type of perspective as to what the land of Israel has to offer. And it's this lack of basic appreciation that underlies both Lashon Hara and Dibas Haaretz, and it's this lack that we especially try to address in this period of the 3 weeks when we're focused on mourning destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, mourning on focusing on the loss of Eretz Yisrael in that sense, and how our lack of appreciation of each other, our sinas chinam, caused that loss. This message is an especially relevant one. Now, just quickly, it's time for Ma'ariv. I just want to quickly review what we spoke about. So we discussed a little bit this medrash that connects the Chet Meraglim and Miriam, and we discussed how it wasn't such an obvious point. One would have thought the Kal V'Chomer would go the other way, and then we questioned what is the focus of the Yesod Lashon Hara? Is it to hurt someone through speech, or is it to indulge in a negative quality? We pointed out how the Rambam's position that it's avak lashon hara, secondary lashon hara, to say something sneaky, hurtful, sounds like he's focused on the action being defined as an act of hurting someone, as opposed to the quality. And we discussed various examples where it may play out. We discussed the Gemara that says that public knowledge is permissible, but Tosus limiting it to only positive public knowledge things. We discussed the dispute between the Chofetz Chaim and Rav Sternbach as far as the prohibition of receiving Lashon Hara. Does it mean believing it? Does it mean not allowing anyone to get hurt? We discussed the Tirosh V'Yitzhar's question about how does this impact on somebody who hears something about himself? Should he stop or should he not stop it? We discussed a little bit the difference between Lashon Hara in writing and Lashon Hara in speech. We discussed Kazhuk Glover's idea that Lashon Hara is really a protective measure against hating people. The same thing that Shilta said about the prohibition of Machlokas. Then we discussed a little bit Lashon Hara Toelas. What exactly is the nature of Toelas? Is it because that's not the quality of Lashon Hara? Is it because the Lo Samra Damriacha outweighs Lashon Hara? And that could explain a little bit the Chafetz Chaim's idea that if it's a minor issue, it may not be worth it. And we discussed the issue of Lashon Hara for the purposes of Chinuch. Again, how does that play out? And also the practice of speaking Lashon Hara without mentioning the name. Does that make a difference or not? Discuss different ways in which that may also reflect this idea. And then we talked a little bit about the historical dispute between Rabbi Shaul Salanter and the Chavetz Chaim. Shaul Salanter not giving Haskamah to Chavetz Chaim because of his ruling that you have to ask Mechila even though that may hurt the guy's feelings. And how this issue may also reflect this, perhaps this debate. And then we suggested that the interrelationship is what's behind the mitzvah of remembering Mice of Miriam. And Rabbi Shaul Isaac shares the idea that the inherent dangers in hurting someone's feelings are what motivate a need for a special mitzvah, and how we see that also in the idea of covering the challahs on Shabbos, and that perhaps this interrelationship is what Rashi was getting at, that when Rashi said that the Raglim should learn from Miriam, he meant not a Kal v'chomer, but that Miriam shows us the need to have an active focus on practicing this mitzvah, and they neglected that responsibility, and that this message as a whole is one that is particularly relevant in this period of time, where we're addressed both at enhancing our appreciation for what Beit HaMikdash meant to us, and our appreciation for our fellow man, which the Talmud tells us it was a lack of that that brought about this disruption. We're a little bit over time, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Wonderful evening.